Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access. Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Today I'm chatting with Leanne Greenberg, who is a BCBA and special education administrator, and we are talking all about inclusion. This is something we can always be talking about and always be talking about more. We're talking about some of the barriers to inclusion, what teachers can do to create more inclusive environments in their school communities, and of course, things we can do to help inclusion actually work. How can we have social inclusion actually happen? What things can we do to address social sensitivity in some of the particularly challenging places in our schools? There are some big barriers to having inclusion actually happen well, like being short-staffed, like having staff members be resistant to inclusion happening. So this is what Leanne and I get into. There's a lot of great conversations happening here. I'd love to hear how inclusive your schools are and what's happening well with inclusion in your schools. Come over to Instagram and chat about it with us in our DMs. And let's go ahead and hear from Leanne. Hi, Leanne. Thanks so much for joining me for the second time on the podcast.
Hey, Sasha. Thanks for having me on.
We were just saying Leanne was on the podcast in like COVID times back in 2020, which feels like, you know, a different lifetime ago.
Feels like forever ago, but also not that long ago. I don't know. It was a weird time.
I know. It totally was. Today Leanne's back on the podcast to talk about inclusion, which I'm happy she suggested this topic because I think this is something we can always talk more about. We can always be leveling up. We can always be learning more about. So I'm excited to dive into inclusion today.
Awesome. I'm excited to talk about it.
So I think the reason that it's important to always talk about, because let's call it the elephant in the room, it doesn't always go well. What are some big barriers that you often see to effective inclusion happening in schools?
It really depends on, you know, on your school, sometimes your culture, but I think, you know, what we see from school to school is sometimes it's the staffing, like having the support, whether that's paraprofessional support, having staff that have been trained in what inclusion should look like. I've seen, you know, for our general education teachers, sometimes it's not that they don't want, you know, students with more moderate to severe disabilities in their class, but they just are like, I don't know what to do. Yeah. And so that, you know, just that like comfort level, and feeling like, you know, it's okay. Like we're going to be there to support you. Another thing that can be really frustrating is sometimes you don't have your admin support. You know, most of the administrators I've worked with luckily have been really supportive of inclusion, and they're, you know, they're like, whatever we can do, let's do it. But, you know, sometimes that piece is missing too. You know, you need to have time to plan. You need to have time to, you know, work out the kinks, especially when you're starting inclusion. You have to be able to look at, hey, what are the needs of the student, but also what are the needs of the adults that are supporting them? And sometimes you try something, you're like, whoa, that didn't that didn't go well. So you have to really be able to look at your data and, you know, collaborate together. And just time can be a barrier with that too.
Yeah, for sure. That time piece. And you need that admin support to give you that time, because you're going to need people to sit down together and be able to collaborate and figure out the best practices to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
You kind of, you know, started out touching on, sometimes it's not that people don't want to have that successful inclusion. It's that like nervousness a little bit, like, I don't know what to do. And I didn't go to school for this. I'm a gen ed teacher. And there's oftentimes some just misconceptions that happen. And, you know, that lack of confidence. And I've definitely seen that at play, which I'm sure you have. What are sometimes some misconceptions, especially about individuals with autism, that might impact, you know, inclusive practices or even willingness to kind of get started with inclusion that you've seen happen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to start, you know, depending on the student's behavioral challenges, sometimes those are, you know, teachers or staff might look at that as a barrier to having a student in their classroom, because it can be disruptive. And sometimes, you know, even as a special education teacher, you know, sometimes you don't know exactly what the student needs. And so you're trying to play with different things and try different supports to really address the behaviors that a student is exhibiting. You know, when you're starting with maybe a student's in like a center-based classroom and you're starting to do that inclusion in a general education classroom, you know, you might see things pop up that you've maybe extinguished in the smaller classroom setting. But now that the student is, you know, spending more time in a larger classroom, those behaviors are popping up again. You know, I think there's sometimes even like little things like stimming, which may not really be disruptive, but, you know, a teacher that doesn't know about autism might think, hey, that's a big problem. Like, you know, they shouldn't be in this class just because of a way that a student looks, even if that's just, you know, that's just how a student is responding to their sensory needs. The other piece too is, you know, it's not just the adults and that student, there's other students in the classroom too, and they're learning how to navigate, you know, being with another child that may be different than them. And so, you know, that can be, it's an amazing learning experience. We should absolutely like encourage inclusion, but, you know, to start with, it can be distracting, or it can be, you know, something that a teacher that is not as experienced with inclusion might just, you know, it could be stressful, because your students are like, you know, navigating that piece too. And you're like, okay, how do we do this?
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the two big ones that popped to my head too, like the behavior piece. And, you know, oftentimes I think the behaviors that other teachers see are the big bad ones, right? The big meltdown on the playground and in the hallway. And even if it happened a few years ago, man, people remember that. And they're like, oh, well, I remember that big meltdown Johnny had 2 years ago. And you're like, well, yeah, that was 2 years ago. Like, he's changed a lot since then. And but people remember that. And that, you know, that what if those behaviors happen in my classroom? Well, it might, but we have a plan for that. That's why we have a behavior plan, and there are strategies we have in place. But that can be hard to overcome, and also that's not a part of all individuals with autism either.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, we know that behavior is communication, and you know, sometimes it's as simple as, hey, does the student have a way to communicate their needs? No. Okay. Well, then let's make sure that they have the tools to do that. You know, sometimes you need, you know, other supports. But there's, you know, it can be hard. A general education classroom is often much larger. There's a lot of students in a lot of our schools. These classes are huge. And so, you know, adding a student with some higher needs, it can feel like a lot, but I think in the long run, it's great for that student, and it's great for all the other students and the adults that are working with the kids in that class.
Yeah. So speaking of the benefits, let's talk about some of the good stuff. So let's talk about some of the really positive and effective inclusive practices that you've seen work well in the schools that you work in.
So you know what I've been thinking a lot about? The cleaning products I use in my house. I know, that might surprise you. Because I use these things every day. Every day I'm cleaning a counter, I'm doing dishes, and there's a lot of discussion lately about which products are safe. And I've been thinking about that. I'm like, I use these things all the time, and are these things really safe for me and my kids to be around? And I don't really have time to do research on which products are safe and which products aren't going to cause some disease in the future. And I was excited to find Blue Land because they're all certified safe and clean supplies, cleaned by the EPA, but they also get the job done. They're actually getting my counters clean. They're actually getting my dishes clean. And they can do it in a way with an impact that I don't have to worry about on me and my kids. So if you've been kind of thinking about this too, using safer cleaning products in your house, take advantage of Earth Day this month and celebrate Earth Month and make the switch today. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/Sasha. I don't want you to miss this. Again, that's blueland.com/Sasha for 15% off. blueland.com/Sasha to get 15% off clean supplies. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended for you. All you have to do is take a quick 5-minute quiz and select items from your dynamic and personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new to you styles. Let me tell you what I love about this, how easy it is. As a busy working mom, having a few new items show up at my door, I'm just ready to go then. I don't have to sit staring at the closet. I know what to wear. I wear those few pieces on repeat for a few weeks and then I send them back. It makes the day-to-day honestly a lot easier. It's all about removing those little decisions we've got to make all day that can take some of that weight off. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. So just visit armoire.style/Sasha. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/Sasha to get up to 50% off your first month and never have to worry about what to wear again. So go ahead and try Armoire today.
Yeah. You know, I think for schools that maybe are starting with this approach, finding really fun activities that you can do. I know in my school district, something that one of our schools does every year is they do this Valentine's event with the student government, Link Crew, and their self-contained classes. And they all do the planning together. And then, you know, all the students, whether they're in special education or general education, they decorate for it. They invite other schools to come to the event too. So it's like this bigger thing. And it's just a really great way to, you know, to make that bridge. So maybe you're starting, you know, with something like that, doing fun activities. There's different groups like Best Buddies. I know in Michigan, they have like a program called Peer to Peer. So there's some different programs that maybe your state has, or you have like a student group on campus. I think that, you know, when you're, you know, really getting that inclusion piece going in the classroom, you want to start small. Like, it's okay to take it incrementally. I even think if you have a really great inclusive environment for students, like, you know, you want to make a plan to ease them into it so that they feel comfortable and successful with that transition.
Starting small is such good advice. I think that's like, we could translate that into so many areas of teaching, right? We want to like do it all right away sometimes. And we like our own worst enemies and just taking the baby steps.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that like professional development too, like even if it's just like colleague to colleague, like showing them like, hey, here's what I do in my classroom. Here's like how we could implement it in your classroom. Like, but also asking them like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what do you think would be you know, helpful. Because I think when somebody just comes into a classroom and they're like, we're going to do it this way. And you're like, whoa, like, you know, it's hard. People don't like other people to get in their space and tell them what to do. So I think you have to have that collaborative approach to really make sure that, you know, you're on the same page and you're creating an environment that everybody's on board with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one challenging thing I see happen a lot with inclusion is that maybe physical inclusion happens. Like kids are in the same physical space. They're like in gym together. They're eating lunch together, but relationships aren't forming. We're not getting right to social inclusion. So how do you approach that? How do you help students build meaningful relationships?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important for the adults to just think about their language, like instead of being like, oh, those are, you know, Miss Greenberg's kids and whoever's kids, or those are those students. Like, no, they're all of our students, and they should be having, you know, they should be talking around the students in their class. Like, they should be talking about all the students in the school as like their students. So I think some of it just starts with that like language piece and how the adults are framing it. I think having, you know, programs where like you have kids paired up and you have like buddies so that they're, you know, starting to form those relationships. Again, like thinking about that idea of like starting small, you know, that buddy is somebody that really brings them in and helps the student feel comfortable. But again, it's that two-way street. Like if, you know, you're starting out with maybe just it's a one-on-one buddy relationship, like for both students in that relationship, they're feeling more comfortable with each other. They're getting to know each other on like a more, you know, granular level. But you know, I think having fun activities for the kids to like really get to know each other. It doesn't have to be like high stakes all the time. It can be like, hey, let's just go play catch outside. You know, having like creating opportunities for kids to have those fun social moments. And then, you know, and then you apply that into the classroom. Okay, we're going to do some small groups together. You know, we're going to do, you know, a whole group, but we're going to, you know, maybe have these two students work together to present something, or, you know, whatever that looks like. It's so different for each kid, but I think you have to be very intentional about how you're creating those opportunities.
I love the point about the language. Oh my God, that's such a pet peeve of mine. And like, it really picks up on that too. Like, oh, the kids from Miss Long's class are coming. And it's like, it's so like condescending, and no one's like meaning to do it, but like it really sets the tone, like everyone else. And it starts there.
Yeah, it really makes that separation, even though, again, you're right, it's not like an intentional thing, but that language is really important.
And again, it's like what we talked about, the like misconceptions and like, you know, but these are, it comes from like a culture, school culture perspective. And I like encourage special ed teachers to like take a 5-10 minutes in the start of the year and do like a little PD with their staff on like things like this, that like these are all of our students, and comments like that kids are listening to. That would be a good little, I just thought, that little thing to put in a PD there, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely. You know, well, and how many of us have walked into like a lunchroom or maybe a school assembly or something, and the special ed team like is sitting separated from everybody else, or like they're in a corner of the lunchroom or whatever. Like, those are such great opportunities to promote inclusion. You know, and they're just like natural, or even like on the playground. Like, sometimes you'll see like, okay, like all the kids are on this playground, and then this group of kids are, you know, over here doing this other thing. And it's like, no, this is a great, like, easy way to just start with that inclusion piece. And, you know, it's slower stakes too.
Yeah. And like simple things like the way, like, you know, like school picture day is scheduled. Like, your third graders should go maybe with the rest of the third graders. And like, you're at the assembly, you're sitting with the rest of the third graders, even in a similar section. And I know accommodations obviously have to be made, but, you know, there's logistical things that as like a school team that you should think about that, like, okay, yeah, we want to obviously make sure our kids' sensory needs are taken care of, behavioral needs are taken care of, but like also how are they as kids and as third, fourth, fifth graders, how are they included in those grades? And
yes.
I think we kind of forget about that.
Saja, I have to tell you, I just had this thought. This was pretty early on in my career. I remember, I was teaching in a self-contained autism class, and my students, you know, were doing various levels of inclusion, but at minimum, like they were all in special areas. Like all of them went out to their gen ed, their grade level, art, music, that kind of stuff. And I remember showing up to school one day, and it was music time. We took the kids to their music class, like normal, and they show up, and nobody's there. And we find out, oh, they went on a field trip. Yes. I can't tell you. I was so upset because, first of all, nobody had told me. I would have said something before this, but I didn't even realize that there was a field trip. And I was like, oh my gosh, my kids, and I don't want to say my kids because I just said that, but like the students that, you know, like they're in that class. Like they were not included, and like they were very much a part of that class. Oh my gosh, I was so upset, and they had already left and everything. And so there's nothing I could do about it, but it was like, it was awful. I mean.
But I think every special ed teacher has a version of that story of not being invited. Like my kids weren't invited for years to be in the spelling bee. And it always like really pissed me off. I was like, my kids can spell. Like, and they were like, these teachers were like horrified. Like, you want to be in the spelling bee? I was like, yes, my kids want to be in the spelling bee. Like, come on. Like,
yeah.
Why does every special ed teacher have this story? Like, and still, like, a second year special ed teacher probably still has a story like this from last year, you know? Like, and it's sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, I still remember that, like, it was yesterday.
Yeah. So, and I think this is why these conversations are important to have consistently and to, like, be having conversations with colleagues, with administrators to avoid that, to avoid the, like, walking into music and, like, oh, third grade's at the zoo today, and they didn't even think to tell me. And mm-hmm. and they didn't even know there were other third graders. Like, that's, like, really the root of the issue is, like, it wasn't – no one was, like – actively trying to like leave those third graders out. It was just like they didn't even know there were other third graders in the building, probably. Like that's how far gone it is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Most likely. And that's really where the problem is. It's like they're not seen as like part of the school. It's like, oh no, that's a whole other class. Like that's not part of the third group. So,
or even just like that assumption, like you had shared with the spelling bee, like that, you know, kids can't do stuff. And I always think like flip it to like, what can they do? Like, yes, they may have additional challenges. That's why they have more supports. That's why they have, you know, whatever it is that's in their IEP, but like they can do a lot of amazing things. And I think if we just start to like switch our lens to like that piece of it, you know, it can really make a difference.
Well, I'll tell you, with the spelling bee, I had a student that had like one of the best memories in the world. So once I finally like got my kids to be in the spelling bee, I was like, we're doing nothing but studying for this damn spelling bee. And he memorized like very quickly all of the words and like won the spelling bee. I was like, damn straight, we're winning the spelling bee. Cause he like had the
oh my gosh.
So I was like, we're not only going to be in the spelling bee, we're going to win the spelling bee. Like, I was like, it was like my mission. I was like, no, we're going to win it. So thinking of, you know, kind of continuing on this, thinking about other kind of barriers or like challenges with inclusion, another thing that we kind of had talked about was like sensory needs and stimming and things like that. When thinking about spaces, because a lot of spaces are hard and like, you know, field trips, assemblies, these are like spaces that are hard for our kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
What role does, you know, obviously sensory sensitivities play a role in successful inclusion, what strategies we use. what kinds of accommodations have you seen kind of be successful? And, you know, obviously collaborating with the OTs in your buildings, but what kind of tips do you have in this area?
I know that this can be hard, but I think that, you know, making sure that you have the staff to support, number one, is really important. You can have great spaces on your campus. You can have great spaces created in the classroom, but especially when you're starting that inclusion, like, you need to have some staff support. Generally from like a, you know, paraprofessional or behavior tech or whatever, you know, that might look like for the student, so that, you know, if a student needs to take a break, if that's outside of the classroom, they need somebody to go with them. If it's inside the classroom, maybe somebody to show them like how to take a break, help them with that routine. So staffing is important, you know, making sure that you have spaces within the classroom. You know, of course, we want to keep our students in our classrooms as much as possible. Sometimes they need to take breaks outside, and that's obviously fine. But we want to teach them to be able to be independent and take those breaks in the classroom, you know, with as little disruption as possible. So if they need some sort of like additional space, like having like, you know, some classrooms will have like a calming quarter, or even like, you know, some students just like they need their own individualized like space, like their own desk. They need like clear like parameters. So even like, you know, I've used like tape on a floor, like this is, you know, so-and-so space, like this is their area, so that it's clear for the student and then also the other students. And then they have like their own kind of space to go. You know, knowing what your students' needs are, and also knowing that sometimes those needs can change in a bigger environment. Like they may have, you know, more sensitivities in a larger space. It's louder. There's more kids. There's, you know, maybe, I don't know, more things on the wall, I feel like, in general education classrooms. Like all those things can be, can increase the sensory needs of a student. I mean, even as an adult, I think like we've all had like moments where you're like, you know, you're in a crowd or something and you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm so overwhelmed. I need to get out of this. Like, you know, we as adults have those needs sometimes too, maybe not to the extent that our students with autism have, but, you know, just being really like human. And, you know, if the student is able to verbally communicate what they need, like really like honoring that. And then if not, like, you know, again, sometimes you have to play around with different things to see, and maybe one day, like they need like, you know, their arms brushed and the other day they just need to sit in a beanbag. Like, you know, depending on what the kids need, you have to accommodate that. I really have appreciated in my district, we have sensory rooms, and some campuses even have like a sensory seeking room, so the kids, you know, can have more space to like be active. And then one's like more of that, you know, calming space. So, you know, the lights are down low, they've got like, you know, the lava lamps and calming music. And I think even having like those different spaces, because kids sometimes need different sensory input. So just being really cognizant of, you know, what those needs are. But then I think what's really important with that, with those kinds of things, is not just saying, hey, this is for this student. Like, you know, of course, if they have their own desk space, that's one thing. But like, if you have a calming corner, like that's open for everybody. It takes the stigma out of using the space, number one. But then also, like, they're just great tools for all kids, you know, if they're feeling a little overstimulated or just need to take a break. Same with like the sensory rooms. Like, why not? You know, of course you don't want it to be like there's, you know, 50 students in the calming space at one time, because then it's not very calm. But like, you know, opening it up, and kids usually like they'll let you know when they need it, and they won't, if they don't need it, they won't use it. So I just think it's good to open it up to everybody.
And I think it's nice to like teach other teachers too that like, oh, these are not just like special ed voodoo tricks. These like work for all kids. Like
yeah.
these are practices that are going to be accessible for lots of types of learners because we all could use a calm down area sometimes.
Yes. So,
you know, and showing kind of how that works. And then it allows that like, if you know how to use this strategy with your students, you'll know how to use it with, you know, all students that come into your classroom, which creates a more accessible space for everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So kind of last question with for parents and caregivers listening that are like, okay, well, my kid's doing like zero to very limited inclusion. How do I get more of this? What advice do you have for, you know, families that are advocating for more inclusive environments in schools?
Yeah. You know, my experience generally is that if a school is not doing a lot of inclusion, it's not so much that there isn't a want for it. I think there's just a like, how do we get this started? And as a parent, you know, you obviously want what's best for your kids, and we know that inclusion is best for all kids. And so, I mean, I would always advocate for parents to advocate for more inclusion, but also, you know, think about how you're supporting inclusion outside of the school. And, you know, what are some things that maybe your kid's on like a soccer team and you could share that, like, hey, they really like soccer. And maybe that's how we start. Like they, you know, they're joining like the soccer team or they're doing PE with other students. Like find like those things that your child is really interested in and, you know, try to advocate for it that way. I think that advocating, you know, for more staff that can support, it doesn't necessarily have to be a one-on-one. If your child doesn't need a one-on-one aid, like you don't necessarily need to have that in the IEP. Like the IEP should be what the kid needs. But, you know, if it's a class with like 30 kids in it, like they should probably have, you know, an aide or somebody to support with that inclusion piece. And just, you know, advocating for, it's not just my child that's going to benefit from this, but it's going to be all students, that benefit from this. And so I think, you know, as a parent, you want to push for things, but I think, you know, finding ways that you can support the school and the teachers too. And, you know, hopefully that pushes for that inclusion. I mean, sometimes that's not how it goes and you've got to be a little bit more aggressive, but I mean, I do think it's important for all students to have an inclusive environment. And if you're a parent and you're able to volunteer in the schools, I think schools could always use more helping hands. And, you know, that also helps with that inclusion piece. If the schools have more support, you know, it just alleviates some of those barriers to inclusion.
Yeah, that's good advice. I like the you know, doing things on your own and then like kind of bringing it up too and like showing what would work too is like a nice strategy for parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big topic and there's a lot, it's easier said than done. Like it's a nice, like, oh, everyone should do inclusion. And I think, you know, people that are in the field every day with kids with complex needs know that there's a right and a wrong way. And there's a lot of hard components. You need a lot of staff. You need the right type of staff. You need common planning time. And like in today's schools, like everyone's just getting by. Like everyone's like treading water till tomorrow. So like it's hard to put, I think, unreasonable expectations on everyone to have this like beautiful, idyllic, like we're all gonna like co-teach in this like situation where in reality, like a lot of classrooms are just understaffed and under-resourced. So you know, I think putting more realistic expectations of like, let's do the best we can with the situation we're in and a little bit is better than nothing is going to give our kids something, you know, right now.
Yeah. I think too, as a parent, I also serve as a school board member. And I think when parents, it doesn't necessarily need to be your first, you know, line of attack, but I think like reaching out to your school board members and just saying, yeah. Hey, you know, this is something that I think our schools should do more. A lot of school board members, one, don't have any education experience, but two, they don't have special education experience if they were an educator. I mean, there are some out there and that's amazing. But, you know, a lot of them, they don't know, and you don't know what you don't know, right? Yeah. And so I think, you know, reaching out to your school board and sharing those ideas and, you know, planting that seed with them, like they're, you know, they're not the ones like necessarily like on the, you know, boots on the ground doing the work, but they can have those conversations and help work with the administration to, you know, make that, make our schools more inclusive. And they're also like, they vote on the budget. And I think it's really important to, you know, when you look at a school district's budget, like that is, you can tell a lot about what a school district values. And I know we're having staffing issues, but, you know, maybe we have to look at what is it? Why are we having, you know, staffing issues? Is it because we don't pay enough? Like that could be, being a paraprofessional and a teacher is hard. And you know, I know it's hard. Not every, you know, funding is an issue, and that's not necessarily something that, school boards can control, but they get that pot of money and they can decide, you know, along with the administration, like where is that money going to go and what do we value? And so I think that, you know, just having those conversations and, you know, helping them to, you know, see what that could look like, I think is really important.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, yeah, like not always like first line of defense, but like if you're at the end of your rope or you've tried all other things is a really good option.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, we've covered a lot, Leanne. Thank you so much for joining me. I think there are a lot of great actionable tips in here. And whether, you know, you're kind of in a newer position or in a school that's kind of newer to doing inclusion right, or whether you're like, I'm veteran at this, but always willing to and ready to level up, I think there's always something new to do with inclusion. So thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening. Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.